It's time to get nerdy, y'all.
A little bit of gaming history for you.
Something relevant in gaming and discuss our opinions on it.
Should we kick it out of here or should we kickstart it?
This is the part where you, the listeners, try to stump the hosts.
I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is Tuesday, May 11th, 2026, and y'all know what that means. It's actually not Tuesday, it's Monday, May 11th, 2026, and y'all know what that means. It's time to get nerdy, y'all. Welcome to episode number 378 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. My name is Lam, also known as Mr. Nice Guy, and I'm joined by my bestie, my comrade in gaming commentary, the miggity 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 Mac, also known as Maction. Mac, how are you, sir?
I'm doing all right, dude. It has been a fun week. I have had a couple of weeks. These past couple of weeks have been very eventful, you know, like car troubles or parents coming to visit or, you know, you just name it. But like this last week was pretty relaxed. Just a chance to kind of like recenter yourself, you know what I mean, and get back into it. So it's been pretty good. How about you?
It's been good, man. I got to ask you a question, Mac, and this is a very, very important question.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on wood-fired pizza?
I quite enjoy it. Back where we went to school together, there was a place that did, you know, like a cart that
yes.
did wood-fired pizza and then eventually got its own strant, if you will. That's what we call them over here. And so I would go into the strant for a slice of za, and the wood-fired was just fantastic. So I've got...
Is that place still open?
As far as I am aware.
I'm going to have to Google.
Yeah, it's been about a year or two. It's been about a year since I was there last, but I seem to recall that it was still open last year.
I remember. I had forgotten about that place until right now. But the reason I bring it up is because my wife and I, for Mother's Day, we went out Friday night just because this pizza place requires a reservation. It's this place in Wisconsin called San Giorgio. And I may have mentioned it on the pod before, but it's amazing. It's it's wood-fired. It's a 900-degree oven. They put it in there for like 70 seconds, and the pizza is just amazing. Now, Mac, the thing that makes this place unique is that they follow like all of the pizza quote-unquote regulations and processes from Florence. So like everything other than the cheese is made in-house. There's certain like rules and ways that you're supposed to make pizza, and they follow all of them. So it's like you're going overseas and getting an amazing pizza. So we went there, and it was very, very good, and then had a good Mother's Day, threw some stuff on the grill, relaxed. It's a good weekend, man.
I hope that when I come out to visit next, that you take me to San Giorgio's.
Dude, we will go to San Giorgio next time. It's in the city, but we will go there next time you come out to visit. Absolutely.
Yes.
It's very, very good pizza. In fact, the best pizza in Wisconsin, as voted by whoever votes on such things.
Yeah,
that was good. Well, Mac, enough about pizza. Enough about pizza. We're not Ninja Turtles.
Mm-mm.
We're not Italian plumbers.
But can you imagine if we were?
If we were, I'd be eating way more pizza. But since I'm not one, I talk about video games in my free time. And so why don't we do that? Let's talk about what we do best and hop right up in that gaming news, my friend. What do you think about that?
Absolutely. Dude, what is new in video gaming?
So much, including price increases, including new games, including leaks and bans.
Ooh.
And Mac, this is episode 378 of Two Nerds in a Pod, nerdiest video game podcast in the galaxy. Mac, let's start with something that's not normally a topic we hit on this pod, but something I find super interesting. This is on PCGamer.com, written by Rich Stanton. Here is the article. Rich writes, the upcoming Forza Horizon 6 has been leaked, apparently through mistake rather than malfeasance, with a Steam upload that contained a full build of the game. Quote, big shout out to the homies at Microsoft for accidentally publishing Forza Horizon 6 on Steam early, says notorious malware website VX Underground on X. Microsoft corrected the issue, but it was too late. Stinking internet nerds yanked it, and now it's all over the piracy sites. Very cool, Microsoft. It does indeed appear in all the usual places, but I won't be downloading it, the author says. Both because I am pure as driven snow.
Uh-huh.
Driven, get it, he says? Yeah. But also because I don't want developer Playground Games banning me from its works until, checks notes, December 31st, year 9999. Take it away, folks. So, Mac, they're giving like an 8,000-year ban to people who have played this game. Mm-hmm. And the way they're doing it is an IP address ban. I agree there should be punishment for playing games early. What do we think about this tactic? Because I have some strong opinions.
Should there be punishment for releasing games early?
Oh, I'm sure someone was punished. I could almost guarantee that someone was punished for clicking the wrong button. But I have some strong opinions on banning mm-hmm. gamers for playing games early. Mm. What do you think?
I have maybe just as strong feelings, but I think my strong feelings are I don't really blame somebody for wanting to play a game early. I mean, I feel like our entire youth was spent doing or imagining things like camping out in front of the game store,
yes,
in front of the movie theater, to be the first person in line, to be the first person to experience it. And we didn't have to worry about internet spoilers back in those days. I don't know. I just feel like experiencing it first, experiencing something early, is
okay,
hardwired into me. You know what I mean?
Even if it's through illegal means, though.
Hey, look, I am a lawful good paladin, okay? And I'm gonna follow the rules. It's what I do. But I understand the impulse, right? And I'm not gonna pretend like I could potentially be, clean and pure like the undriven snow.
As the author said.
Like the author said, yeah. But, like, I mean, I would be tempted. I think I probably wouldn't, but, I can understand the desire.
So I'm not advocating for illegal behavior,
oh,
right?
I of
totally
course.
Get, like, it sucks when, like, especially with a story-based game, when people play it early. Mm. And some may hear this topic and think there's not a lot of discussion to be had here. I'm just calling for game developers to get more creative with the punishments when it comes to this type of stuff. Whether it's toxic behavior online or whether it's playing a game early, banning people, especially when you're banning their IP, mm-hmm. is so 2010, I just think it doesn't make sense. Because number one, if you're playing games early, you know how to get them illegally, which means there's probably a pretty big overlap in the Venn diagram of people who also know how to use a new IP address, right? Who have a VPN mm-hmm. access. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be able to get around that ban anyway. I think it'd be interesting to give like some type of achievement that says you played this game early. Mm. And it's like a scarlet letter on your profile.
Ooh.
And maybe it even makes it harder for you to play the game
uh-huh.
going forward on that particular profile. Because you can make a new profile. But mm-hmm. if it's your main, if it's my Mr. Nice Guy 425,
uh-huh.
and I have to go make a new profile every time I want to play the game, that would hurt me. That would hurt.
Sure. Could you imagine if that achievement sets a flag so that, like, the rubber banding on the AI is, like, 10 times harsher in a racing game?
Yes.
Ooh, that would be cruel.
Yeah. So
interesting.
I'm not saying go pirate games, but I'm also saying, like, banning IPs, that's very, very retro, right? We should have had that for game history. Well, let's keep things moving, Mac. We got a couple other news stories to talk about. We got some Nintendo stuff to talk about, which this is super interesting to me. And I'm not saying that it wasn't expected, but let's talk about the Nintendo Switch 2. This is on Game Informer by Marcus Stewart. Nintendo has announced that it will be raising the price of the Switch 2, citing, quote, changes in market conditions. The new prices will take effect in Japan first and extend to other regions in the coming months. Not that we don't care about Japan, but because we do have listeners in Japan, but many of our listeners are in the U.S., Canada, and Europe. So I'm going to read the prices in U.S., Canada, and Europe that will be happening effective September 1st. U.S. Switch 2 will be $499, which is currently $449, and it will be receiving similar increases in Canada and Europe. It's worth noting the article says that the new price of the standalone Switch 2 in the U.S. is now the same as the Mario Kart World Bundle, which Nintendo stopped making last December and is now available in limited quantities, if at all. Mac, the Switch 2 launched globally on June 5th, 2025. So it's been out less than a year, and it will go into its price bump like 18 months after the original release.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on this, given what we've seen from other consoles in the industry?
Well, it seems fairly well apace. I feel like I saw something about an earnings call not that long ago with Nintendo talking about what they were going to do, how they were going to do it, and why they were going to do it. But some of the details escape me now. I should have known that we were going to talk about it and reviewed the conversation from earlier.
You're good. I can paraphrase, you know, what I have heard, which is that over the past couple of days since this was announced, Nintendo stock has dropped pretty significantly because the price change in Switch 2 will result in projected lower sales. So stock has gone down as a result of this. That's the gist of it.
You know, obviously we're on a little bit of a delay and it takes time to type things in, but Galvatron mentions some of these points as well, and I'll just read his comment real quick. The definition of irony. Nintendo's shareholders have been urging a price hike for months. Nintendo finally hikes the price and lowers their hardware sales forecast, and Nintendo's stock takes its biggest dive since 2022. Seems like an own goal.
I guess my commentary on this issue is the fact that if others weren't doing this, I don't think Nintendo would do it. If I own a sandwich shop and you own a sandwich shop and we're competing with, you know, Subway and Jersey Mike's and, you know, other places. Shout out to Jersey Mike's. If you ever want to give us free subs, we'll shout you out. I love your sandwiches. And the price of ham goes up. And no one raises the price of their subs. Everyone just eats it. You know, no pun intended.
Well, I mean,
then everything would just stay the same. You were going to do that joke. I beat you to it. Sorry, Matt.
Yeah. No, it's okay. It's okay. I cannot get on your level.
It was right there. It was right there. Low hanging fruit. But point being, because everyone has instead decided to say these parts are now more expensive, RAM is more expensive, we're all going to raise prices. Everyone is doing it. And Nintendo, in my opinion, is the least necessary price hike because the console is so new.
The hardware in use is the, I don't want to say lowest end, but of the other ones, it is not the cutting edge tech.
Fair.
I forget, but I remember when the Switch 2, you know, when all the specs were announced, I believe they were running chipsets from like 2021 or something like that. Much farther behind as compared to others. And so you would think that those would be least impacted by shortages of items. So,
Yeah, and I would imagine that they probably have a pretty big inventory of Switch 2s that were already made based on the prices that they paid. Yeah. And so, yeah, if forward-looking inventory is going to be more expensive, fine, raise the price, right? But to me, what is that, a 10% price hike about? To me, that seems a little steep, as it did for PlayStation, as it did for Xbox. Xbox got a little bit of grace because they did dip the price of Game Pass, but Nintendo really not doing anything to appease the people, you know, for a console that's less than a year old. So, you know, I think this is just follow the leader.
Yeah, that is kind of how it feels.
It's frustrating, but that's life. Well, Mac, you know, let's talk super quickly about this, because there's another article about Nintendo, and I feel like this is kind of the result of the shares dropping, and this made me laugh when I read it. It says, this is not Nintendo Life. Stop stressing. Nintendo says more Switch 2 games are coming. This is by Ollie Reynolds. We want to give Ollie a shout out, but I don't really need to read this article. They basically just said at their investor call during the Q&A that there's more Switch 2 games coming this year that are not yet announced. So
that is kind of how time works, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? I'm glad to know that they were not going to not release any more Switch 2 games.
Oh, yes. I mean, I was so worried about it, as were we all.
I mean, the only way this is exciting, and I think they also made it clear, I'm not going to read the whole article, but shout out to Ollie, that it's not like a new Mario or anything like that. It's just that there's more games coming, which they could be good, they could be bad. If we knew that it was going to be a new open world Zelda, I feel like that would be article worthy. But I don't think it is. Now, that said, Mac, we are getting a remake of Star Fox 64. That's coming to the Switch 2 with multiplayer and dogfighting and single player. Any memories of Star Fox 64? Is that a game you were into?
No, sadly, nice guy, I didn't get my Nintendo 64 until I want to say 2015, 2016, right in there. And so I still, to this day, haven't really played Star Fox 64. I think my first little foray into games on the N64 were things like Perfect Dark, Ocarina of Time, and Majora's Mask, and you know, a few others in there. But Star Fox 64 is still on the list.
The 64, and we don't have too much time to dive into this, but it's such an interesting console to me because it's one that I have a lot of really, really fond memories of, but it's also the one that, in my opinion, has aged the worst. Out of, you know, NES, SNES, and N64, the graphics at the time, it was like, wow, this is 3D, this is amazing. Don't look so good anymore. They really don't. You don't get a lot of people making retro games in 64-bit. You get a lot of 16-bit and a lot of 8-bit. But I think that more remakes from the N64 on the Switch 2 would be a welcome thing. Mac, of the N64 games that you've played, which one would you like to see a remake of? I know my answer. I know my two. I know my top two.
I think I would very much like to see... I'd like to see Ocarina of Time redone in, like... I don't know what engine it is that they're using for Switch games, but, you know, a remake in the Unreal Engine or something like that could be quite fun.
Yeah, I get it. So here's the ones I would like to see, and I'll just say two. And this is going to be so cliche. You guys are going to say, yeah, nice guy, we know. GoldenEye 64. And they did it on the Switch. They had GoldenEye Reloaded on the Switch, and it was great. It had a community. There was no voice chat, unfortunately, but you could play online, and we all had a lot of fun with it. First-person shooter that was available on the Wii. Actually, it was called GoldenEye Wii. It wasn't called GoldenEye Reloaded. That was the Xbox version. But that said, that game is gone. Servers are down. Bring that back for the Switch 2. I promise you Nintendo it will have a community, and it will be great. The other one is Gauntlet Legends. There's been Gauntlet games since. There have been Gauntlet games before, but there's never been a game to me quite like Gauntlet Legends. So I recommend that we get that. Mm. And Mac, that's been our news for the week.
Nice. Well, thanks, Mr. Nice Guy, for taking us on a tour of what's going on right now. I want to take us on a little look into the past with some video game history. I have a bunch of really cool things that have happened this last week in years before, and I want to start us off with something very near and dear to my heart from the year 1990. The launch of a little thing called the Game Genie for the NES. Now, nice guy, I had a Nintendo Entertainment System around this time, and I also got my hands on a Game Genie. And while I wouldn't say that it taught me lots of things, it did teach me to be willing to tinker on something like software. Because for those of you who maybe the Game Genie is a little bit too old school, you would connect the cartridge, which video games came on cartridges then, you would connect it into this Game Genie, which acted as a sort of a pass-through, almost like an adapter that plugged into the game cartridge and then into the console itself. And as data was being read on the cartridge, you could tell the Game Genie to change something about that. Like, you could have it target a specific thing, and it took a lot of trial and error. People would always be passing around, you know, these various codes that worked out well, but you would find like a specific spot in the memory where it would keep how many lives you had, and bam, we set it to always be 99, and therefore you've got infinite lives and nice. Tons of stuff. Or you want something where, like, I don't know, maybe the game has a mechanic that allows you, you know, maybe it's a side scroller or whatever, like Mega Man or something, and you can set like the gravity or something in there to be like super low so that you can jump all over the screen. And of course, plenty of the interesting things that come along with that, because like you're walking along, everything's going fine, you jump up, you go over the screen, you screen wrap into the next screen, and there's spikes at the bottom and you die. And you know, it was just all these sorts of really interesting things that you could break a game in so many interesting ways, and yeah, it encouraged you to fiddle with things. Mr. Nice Guy, do you have any experience back in the old days with the game genies?
I did not have a game genie, man. To me, it was all, at the time, it was all about Konami code and different glitches that were in game but were discovered that you could exploit. So I never unfortunately had a game genie. Although I say this real quick, as I've started to retro collect, a lot of the games that I get come with game genie codes on the back. So whoever owned the game before they sold it to the shop, like, printed off a piece of paper, put it on the back of the cartridge so that they could always remember the codes for 99 lives and whatnot. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, very cool. And like this fun little window into the past when you see it's like their handwriting, right?
Yeah.
Really cool, man. I've done that on a couple of my old game cartridges as well. Well, and Galvatron does mention in the chat, he says, didn't Nintendo try to sue Game Genie? And you are 100% right. We've talked about that in the past. I wasn't going to go into it just here, but well spotted, my dude. I will move us a little bit farther forward to the year 1992 with a little game called Wolfenstein 3D, which was released for the PC. A game that, again, very much was something that I played growing up, had a very good time of. I mean, what could be more American than trying to beat Adolf Hitler and his crew at their own game as BJ Blazkowicz? Nice Guy was... I kind of had to sneak Wolfenstein 3D in my household, as it was a little violent. You weren't so similarly troubled, were you?
I wasn't really into PC at that stage, but I will say, I would remember going to a friend's house and playing like Duke Nukem and stuff like that. So same type of concept, just a different game.
Absolutely. And definitely would not have been welcomed, that game, in either of our households.
Definitely not.
Yeah. Well, we'll pop forward to 1995, the launch of the Sega Saturn, which launched with 5 games. And Nice Guy, I didn't have a Sega Saturn. And, you know,
I did not either.
A lot of people didn't, but around the time of the launch of the Sega Saturn, Sega had the largest share of sales in the United States. Sega was rocking 36% of the gaming market. Nintendo was doing about 30%, and Sony was coming in at 24%. Obviously, of the disc-based consoles, Sony, the jilted lover of Nintendo, who they were making a disc-based console together, but Nintendo double-crossed them, and so Sony released the PlayStation 1 as a standalone, because they're like, well, hey, we're not letting all that R&D time go to waste. And Sony certainly, the PlayStation certainly wound up eating everybody's lunch for a little while there. But the Sega Saturn got theirs off of the ground first. 5 launch titles, my dude, 5 launch titles. I'm going to read them all out so that can see and we can all wonder aloud as to why the Sega Saturn might have struggled. Pebble Beach Golf Links.
Interesting.
Daytona, USA. Clockwork Knight. That one was a side-scroller. Panzer Dragoon. An on-rails shooter, and Virtua Fighter, a fighting game.
I thought you
game.
Were a fan of Panzer Dragoon.
I am. I do. I really like it. But I think it is fair to say that, like, that's not a strong launch lineup, you know.
Fair.
5 games, a fighter, an on-rails shooter, a driving game, a golf sim, and one side-scroller. And I get it. It was a new console. It's sometimes rough to develop for a new system. But like, I really think part of Sega's issue in getting rolling was just not a lot of good software to push it at the outset. But you know, that's just me with the benefit of hindsight. Now, nice guy, I don't think you had a Sega Saturn, right?
I did not, man. But hearing about it, like, it just sounds like it could have really been a magical thing had they put a Sonic on there to start, right?
Yeah, I know that they were planning on one, but I think they wound up canceling it somewhere in there. I know that the Sega Saturn had some really good processing power, and I'm pretty sure that it had like two processors in there that wound up working well together when they worked, but it was really hard to program for. Something that Sega, I feel like, does a lot. They have like some good, powerful things that's hard to program for. Something that I think the Sega Genesis should rightly be, you know, nose in the corner about was that they had fantastic sound chips. But they didn't make a good sound-making program, a good composing program, so that when people were making games, that it was easy to make good music on there. But, like, when you had somebody who worked with it well, that music just... Castlevania Bloodlines, I think, incredible music. Anyway... one last one, nice guy, that I would be remiss if I didn't mention. 2009 launched for the PC a little game called Plants vs. Zombies. One that I have enjoyed. I hope, have you played? You've played Plants vs.
Zombies. Yeah, I've played both of them. I think there's one and there's two, right? I've played both. I even streamed a little Plants vs. Zombies 2 at one point. Not like my favorite game, but I had some fond memories of it. Like, I remember you could run around and did it have a multiplayer shooting mode, I think, in addition to the kind of tower defense. I'll have to double check that. But I had some fun times with it. Great games.
Yeah, great games. And all started this last week in 2009. But Mr. Nice Guy, that's what I had for video game history this week.
Awesome. Well, let's talk about our topic of the week, a segment where we discuss something relevant in gaming and give our opinions on it. Mac, and I'm pretty hyped for this. All the stuff Steam is doing, I feel like they're just continuing to cement themselves as one of my favorite gaming companies, and I think this next thing might do it even more. This is on IGN.com, written by Jacqueline Thomas. Here's what Jacqueline writes. Things have been heating up for the Steam machine over the past couple weeks. Last couple weeks, she writes. On top of shipment data suggesting Valve's mini gaming PC is coming soon, code found in the latest Steam update hints at the different versions of the console that will be available. Spotted by WCCF Tech, it seems like there will be four different versions of the Steam machine, along with two versions of the Steam frame available at launch. However, while this does suggest there will be plenty of choices for the upcoming hardware, nothing yet indicates just how much it will cost. Luckily, Mac, even though we still don't know how much the Steam machine will cost, it does seem like Valve will be employing the same reservation queue that it just implemented for the Steam controller after it sold out immediately. As for which versions of the Steam machine will be available, the author says, Valve told me all the way back in November that there will be a 512GB entry-level model alongside a 2TB version. Nobody except Valve knows what the other two options will be or if these options even exist, but it's highly likely that at least one of them is going to be a bundle with the Steam frame and controller. Mac, my question for you, we know there's a 512, we know there's a 2TB. Hardware can be variable. What other stuff would you like to see in a Steam machine bundle? And you can get creative here. If there's potentially going to be four different versions. Like, Mac says, hey, you know what? I want this Steam machine. I need it in front of my TV. What do you want in the bundle, dude? And take your time, man. This is Final Jeopardy.
Yeah, it is. I think what I'd like to see, in addition to the box itself, and potentially a Steam controller to go along with it, might be nice. Keep it all in the family there. I think I would like to see a bundle that gives you like a bunch of games as well. Like a nice little, a good little start to your library. Maybe just all of the Valve games for starters.
Okay.
And then, you know, maybe, I mean, I don't know what it would cost for the whole kit and caboodle, but maybe if you just gave somebody a bunch of the basics to get started. I don't know how many people are going to be setting up a brand new profile for their Steam machine. So maybe that might vary, but I think they've got the pull that they could probably arrange for some new or even old games to come as a bundle on it and be added to your account. I think that'd be a good thing to add.
So I agree. Like, I think that that should be a no-brainer, right? Like, and maybe not a no-brainer, but I think that should be a
yes,
given.
Thank you for sparing my feelings. I know nobody would think of this.
I just realized how that sounded. That's
it's,
not what I meant.
It's okay, brother. I would never assume that that's what you were saying about me.
That should be something that they should absolutely do, because Left 4 Dead, Left 4 Dead 2,
yeah.
Portal 2, right? Half-Life. And maybe not Half-Life Alyx, right? Unless it does come with the Steam frame so you can actually play it.
Yeah.
But I think another really unique idea would be a free, like, two free games and no stipulations on price, just two free games. And you can use it now. You can use it during the Steam sale. You can use it whenever. And it expires a year from purchase. Something like that.
Okay.
And it'd be interesting to see how creative people would get and what games they would use it on. Mm-hmm. Because you're right. Most people, I think many people who purchase this are already going to have a Steam library.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that a first-time Steam user is like, you know what? I've always wondered about this Steam thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to spend $1,000. You know, I just don't think that's what it is. I think it's people who have Steam libraries.
Yeah.
So give us two free games. It could be a $70 game. It could be a $10 game. But I think that would be really cool. The only other thing that I could really, really think of would be some type of headset. And I don't know that they're releasing...
Like ear headset?
Yeah, like some type of headset with a mic. Because that's something that a lot of Xbox consoles come with. Or PlayStation in the form of their controller that now has a mic. Is the ability to communicate as you're playing. And I don't know that the Steam machine has that. Now, I haven't looked as much into the Steam controller as I should, but I think that's something that would be cool because a lot of games are multiplayer.
Now, Lom, my question for you is, let's talk about the reservation system, the reservation queue, because I know last week we were talking about the quick sellout of the Steam controllers, right? And we were asking, you know, what are we going to do? How are we going to deal with this? What I haven't done a reservation yet for the thing, so I haven't interacted with it. Have you interacted with it or know how it works?
So here's what I did, because I didn't buy one day one, but now they actually have it set up, Max, so that if you go to Steam Controller website, you can click reserve now. And then when your number comes up, it will send you an email and you'll have 3 days to then order. I don't even know if I'm really going to buy it. Mm-hmm. I just said, you know what? Let me click on this and do some research in the meantime, and then I can decide. But here's my thoughts on the reservation queue.
Yeah.
I feel like Steam purposely didn't do the queue with the Steam controller when they knew it was an option. Because I feel like they did it with the Steam Deck or with the Valve Index. I can't remember. And so, I mean, they had to know how popular this was going to be. And they chose to let scalpers get it. So at least they're making right with the Steam box.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, I hope that it winds up successfully preventing there being that much scalping. I don't know, dude. I think there are a few things that unite all gamers on, but I think most of us don't care for scalping.
I don't care for scalping at all. I'm sure, I don't have the chat pulled up, but I'm sure Galvatron's in there like, I scalp all the time. I scalp stuff all the time. You know, that's, anyway.
Our resident contrarian.
Mac, I do have like one last question for you, and I'm super interested in this for both you and for those who are watching live. Do you think that the Steam machine, for a guy or girl who has a PC, who has a Steam Deck, and I know you have both of those things as well, like, does this add anything to the gaming experience that we don't already get? I'm still trying to figure that out, or if I'm just kind of like excited because I really like Steam.
We've been in this weird world for the past 6 years, 7 years, where computer components have varied widely and wildly in their availability. First, we had Bitcoin and the NFTs that were eating up all of the, you know, all of the GPUs, and then all of the CPUs and all of the RAM. And then that eased up. And then we had COVID and supply lines and issues. Sorry, some of these happened all consecutively, conjunctively, all were going on. And then what we have now is we've got the AI data centers that are convincing certain manufacturers of storage and RAM to create no more consumer items and just sheerly do for the data centers, decreasing supply, raising prices, making the scarcity, all that. So I feel like we live in this strange moment where for the past six years or so, the volatility of supply of computer components has been, you know, crazy. I think the greatest thing about these Steam boxes coming up is that depending upon the stats or the specs, rather, they may actually wind up being a way for people to get in that otherwise they're just frankly, I mean, like, we were kind of chuckling about, we don't need another computer when Valve, you know, announced that they were going to do it. But now maybe we kind of do, and maybe there's no real other way to get it. When I got the Steam Deck, a large chunk of that reason being was because I'm like, this is the cheapest way for me to get something that can play a game like Baldur's Gate 3 or a more modern thing. And so this could very well be the same story in this. Valve might be coming along with new hardware, like the Avatar. When we needed it most, it arrived or it vanished or however that works out. But yeah, could be. And that's where I think about
it. That's, dude, I never would have thought of that. That's a really good point. Like,
you got to be poor like me.
A computer. I don't think you're poor. A computer made by the people who have the dominant gaming storefront, right? Because it guarantees that it's going to play most of the stuff that's on there as of today. And especially if you're still waiting for a Steam Deck 2, and we have no idea when that's coming. And the Steam Deck isn't old. It's still fantastic, but it's showing its age. It can't play everything. This could be a really, really good option that's just not portable. So that's a really good point, man. We shall see. Well, hey, that's been our topic of the week.
Well, now we turn to a crowdfunding project that's trying to get off of the ground. We call this Kick or Kickstart. Mr. Nice Guy, I've got a link in the chat for you and everybody else. This is to a little project called Donut Dodo. All right. So, if you take a minute and join me over there, it is a new game for the Nintendo 64. A game that just a console that just shortly ago we were talking about, nobody makes games for the 64 anymore. So, what is this? Donut Dodo is a game that has already been released on PC, and this is a release for the Nintendo 64, rebuilt in that code base so that it can run natively. It includes a ROM file if you're interested in going that way, or a physical cartridge if you want to do that. This comes from a developer out of Luxembourg, who it is his first Kickstarter. However, he's done about four or five games on Steam before. Now, the Kickstarter itself, he was looking for $11,700. That's the initial goal. Already exceeded that. And $12 minimum buy-in for the digital ROM file, and $83 for a physical cartridge. Of course, this is being done in euros, so those numbers shake out a lot more, you know, a lot more like, you know, it's like 10,000 euros type of a thing instead of $11,700. You know, that sort of thing. These are round numbers in euros is what I'm getting at. Anyway, it is almost a solo dev. It's a team of two. You've got one person who's handling all of the programming, the design, the concepts, everything, and a music composer. So it's not quite a Cave Story situation, but getting pretty close. Having looked at the video now, I'd love to get your impression as to if this feels like it's a good fit for the N64.
I mean, I feel like that's a very much a leading question. So for those of you who are audio listeners after the fact, you can't see this unless you look it up. It's very much NES graphics.
Yeah, it has that feel, doesn't it?
It does. It has nothing about the graphics that look like N64.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously, if the N64, if the NES would be powerful enough to run this, the N64 would certainly as well. And that is what the case is here. I think that this is just the creators being a fan of the N64 and choosing to put it here rather than it actually being an N64.
Yeah, in the FAQ section, he does, one question that is posed is why the Nintendo 64? And he says, I have a fond nostalgia for the system, so it felt like a natural choice. And I mean, I guess, I don't know. I kind of feel like the Nintendo 64, that's where we really got the 3D going.
Right.
And that's not to say that there were no 2D games for the Nintendo 64. But I very much got the impression that this game felt like it would be more at home on the Super Nintendo, frankly, than on the N64. It felt like a 16-bit game rather than a 64-bit game. But anyway... Now I don't know too much more about that. I did take a little bit of a look on Steam at some of the other titles that this developer has put out there. Most of them, not exactly my thing, although they do tend to be pretty positively reviewed overall, the ones that I looked at. So maybe he might have a talent, and he does say that, that the point of this is that this Kickstarter is that he really wants to put it on Nintendo 64 and have it be a physical cartridge. And for anybody else who wants to do it and wants to participate in the process, they can. So, more power to him. I think I'm probably tilting my hand a little bit on what I think about this particular Kickstarter. But, nice guy, what about you?
How much is this? I didn't get to see that.
$12 for a ROM, $87 for a cartridge.
That's wild.
Or sorry, $83 for a cartridge.
That's wild, right? Like, I would have to look and see comparing to what other N64 similar projects have cost.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, you can get a legitimate, current game for $80. No, not to say that retro stuff isn't worth the money, but I don't think it's costing nearly that much to make this. There's not a lot about this that impresses me. It actually kind of gives me a vibe. What's that game, Mac, where there's like these birds on the screen and you're trying to get up on top of them and hit them? And it's very much a platformer like this. Anyway, I'll remember it later, but I feel like this has that type of vibe, which I like influence, but I don't think this is original enough of an idea to justify the price. That's what I'd say.
Yeah.
So for me, this is a kick.
I will say, I think the price for a ROM file, I think that's good. 10 euros, 12 US dollars. Yeah. For a physical cartridge, I think it is a little bit higher. And I mean, clearly it has the audience sufficient to have fully funded this project, and we wish them all the best. I would say kick for myself as well. Not my thing, but obviously we wish you the best, and yeah, sure, Donut Dodo's gonna do well.
Yeah, cool name. Awesome. Well, now it is time, Mac and friends, for a segment we call Nerdflex.
Woo-hoo-hoo.
A segment where you, the viewers, try to stump the host. Sometimes you do, sometimes you do not. If you're here live and you want to put a multiple-choice gaming-related question in the chat, please do so. And if not, we have this trusty test bank of questions, randomly generated, that Mac and I will use nothing but our noggins to answer. So, Mac, let's start there. The first question this week comes from, it's a Nintendo question. It says Nintendo-20. And that, I feel like that may give the answer away. Over what 2 years were Nintendo's celebratory year of Luigi? Over what 2 years were Nintendo's celebratory year of Luigi?
So I think the years of Luigi were like some weird number of years, like a 2013 or something like that.
Well, so here's the thing. I think Mario came out in 85.
Uh-huh.
And I feel like Year of Mario was like 30 years after that.
Okay.
So like 2015.
Okay. Yeah.
And I feel like Year of Luigi wouldn't have been before Year.
That's probably a fair thing. So what do we think? Something more like...
I think like 2017, 2018.
Okay.
But I could be totally off.
Sure. Well, we don't have to be combined on this, so I'll stick with 2013, 2014 if you want to go 17, 18.
All right, let's see what the answer is. Dude, how did you know this? It was 2013, 2014.
George just lucky, I guess.
Okay, we'll take it. Well, Mac, here is our next question, and it is a special round.
Woohoo!
And I'm 99% sure this is not one we've done. So here's the special round question. Name two video games based on an anime. Name two video games based on an anime. I feel like we could just start naming anime. And
yeah, I guess kind of everything's had the Initial D. It was an anime, a manga, an anime, and you know, it had a video game thing as well.
Pretty sure there's Dragon Ball Z Budokai. Lots of Dragon Ball Z fighting game.
Okay.
Based on anime.
There's gotta be a Sailor Moon video game somewhere in there. I don't know that many anime, but yeah. Like there's gotta be.
Pretty sure there's an Attack on Titan game for GameCube even.
Oh, wow.
I'm gonna have to look that up later, but I'm pretty sure there's an Attack on Titan.
Attack on Titan's that old?
Actually, you know what? You might be right. That may not be the case. But I'm pretty sure there's an Attack on Titan video.
There had better be by this point.
And Mac, we've missed the most obvious.
Legend of Korra? Is Legend of Korra a anime? Last Airbender? Is that an anime?
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Okay, then I'll throw those in the ring as well.
And if Spenis was here, he'd be upset that we didn't say Pokemon immediately.
Is Pokemon an anime?
Yes! You didn't watch the Pokemon cartoon?
Well, yeah, but like, didn't the game come out before the anime?
Dude, I gotta Google that, because I don't think so.
Okay. I could be wrong.
Anyway, that's plenty. So let's see what we got. Dude, Initial D, arcade game.
Yes.
Dragon Ball Z games, One Piece games. Oh, dude, in parentheses it says Pokemon was a game first.
Oh! Nice.
So that answers that question.
Yeah, that's Trixie. Nice.
Awesome. Well, let's find one last question.
Well, let's see. Galvatron has a question for us.
Oh, here we go.
Which Japanese sports car is on the cover of Forza Horizon 6? Now, hang on. Let's just note, this game has not yet been released. So if we get this wrong, I am not taking the L on this.
Are we going to get banned if we answer it right?
Oh. The Acura NSX, the Toyota GR-GT, the Nissan GT-R, the Lexus LFA, the Toyota AE86, that's the Initial D car, the Honda S2000, or the Mitsubishi Lancer Evolution. Of all those cars, there are two that really stand out to me. I would guess the Nissan GT-R.
Sure.
But based on absolutely nothing.
I think we could eliminate the Honda S2000, and I think we could eliminate, there was another one you said near the end.
The Mitsubishi or the Toyota Mitsubishi Lancer. We can get rid of the AE86 because, like, that's a 1986 Toyota Corolla. That's what an AE86 is. That's not on the cover of Forza.
No, it's not. So one was a Lexus, and then there was one that was Acura as well. So I think it's the Acura or the Nissan, but we got to be united on this. So what do you think? You think the Nissan, right?
I'm leaning toward the Nissan, but I'll go with the Acura on you because my choice of the Nissan is based on nothing.
All right, let's go with the Acura, see what he says.
All right. Wrong. It is the Toyota GR-GT. It's already been confirmed, and the cover art is public knowledge. I've got video game covers on. Well, they don't do box art anymore. We don't have the boxes. It's all digital.
Exactly. Anyway, we learned something new today, and that has been Nerdflix.
Mm-hmm. Well, now we turn to a little bit of legalese.
Legalese.
I am not a lawyer, but the law does, for better and worse, impact the way that we enjoy our favorite art form. And you can file today's bit of info under the heading that we talk about regularly of how the companies aren't your friend. This is a bit on Epic and Apple, because even though you thought that the debate, that the argument, that the back and forth over Fortnite was done, gone, and buried, it has not been. So, for those of you coming online late here, Epic did not want to keep paying Apple, or Google for that matter, their 30% cut of in-app purchases for the V-Bucks that they sold on Fortnite. And so, they snuck a special bit of code into an update for Fortnite on the mobile platforms that would direct purchases through Epic's direct processing rather than through the iOS or the Android storefronts. And then they waited a couple of months to make sure that nobody caught on that they had made those changes in the program before they activated the direct payment method. Now, when the platforms found out about this, they kicked Fortnite off of their stores, both Apple and Google. And we don't need to rehash all of the stuff going on there, but that's just the big overview and something to keep in mind, that in spite of Epic's PR claims that they were doing all of this for you, they really were just doing all this for themselves. Now, after all of that smoke cleared, and Epic was like, you gotta let us back on your storefront. And they're like, no, we don't. You broke the contract. And then the judges were like, hey, let them back on for now. We'll just keep the status quo while we hash all this out. After all the smoke clears and Epic countersues for, you guys are an illegal monopoly. You can't tell us what to do. Get out of my room, mom. You know, and all those things, that Epic loses almost every single legal claim except against Apple, except for really the one that Apple can't outright buy, can't outright ban the option of using other payment processors. That's bad form. And so the judges did order that Apple had to allow this to happen. And Apple, ever the petulant child, decided that they really didn't want to comply with the one thing that they had to do because, again, they don't care either. It's just about the money. And so they have been assessed contempt proceedings because they did not do the one thing that they had to do in all of this. And they begged Justice Kagan on the Supreme Court, because the circuit where this is going on, the contempt proceedings and everything, that's Justice Kagan's circuit. And so they asked to get cert, which is for the Supreme Court to take it up, because they lost at the district, they lost on appeal. And this is just on the contempt proceedings. They're like, no, don't hold us in contempt of court. We have good reasons, we promise. And Kagan said, nope, not interested. And so now contempt proceedings are happening, and all because they're not getting a Supreme Court lifeline. While I couldn't say which way the wind is blowing here, I think we can safely say that Apple's going to lose a little bit of that money they've been holding on to so tightly, and who knows if, because of the contempt proceedings, we wind up getting some new and interesting things, such as more information about what's going on behind the scenes. Because when things make it out of settlement and into courtland, we learn just so much fun stuff about their plans and how things work. I frankly, Mr. Nice Guy, am quite excited for the contempt proceedings.
Nerd alert!
I know, nerd alert, but I sincerely hope that it kicks up some interesting morsels for me to share with y'all during Legalese. But that, my dude, is what I had for you today.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing, Mac, and thank you all of you for tuning in live and or after the fact. The Tuners in a Pod, we appreciate you for hanging out with us. Mac and friends, before we go, we have one last segment called What We've Been Watching and What We've Been Playing, where we talk about just that, the cool, nerdy stuff we've been into across all platforms. Mac, If you're here live, they have a job to do. They can tell us what they're playing. But what are you into, man?
Well, I haven't been watching or playing all that much new, but I am going to catch Project Hail Mary again before it leaves theaters. We've got a date planned for tomorrow to go do that. But I have been watching the new Netflix season of Bridgerton. Finished that up over the weekend. Good times, if you're into that sort of thing. Yeah. Now, as for playing, though, I've been playing Creeper World 4. It's one of my go-to games. Tower Defense, love it. I've been playing GURPS, of course, and some D&D on the weekends. Not nearly as much as I would like, but I am getting some of that time in. What about you, dude? What are you watching? What are you playing?
So, a couple things, Max. So, I've been playing Teamfight Tactics, which I love, I love, I love, I love. My brother plays it. We squad up. We play some Teamfight Tactics. It's 8 people playing, free-for-all, auto-battler. You build your team. You put items on them. And then you play against each person. Mm-hmm. And the last person standing after everyone's health is down is the winner, right? So that's super fun. I think I mentioned last week I've been playing some For Loop beta, which yeah. I've had a lot of fun with a couple guys who I know that have been into it. And the last beta, for those who are interested in trying it, Thursday through Sunday is coming up. Last open beta before it's done. So that's been fun. As far as watching, dudes, I like roasts. I like watching roasts.
Oh, did you watch the roast of Kevin Hart?
I watched the clips, and I feel like, Mac, it's such a funny time in the timeline where you don't need to sit down and watch the whole thing. You can get the highlights on YouTube, on TikTok, on whatever. So I've been watching the highlights, some really, really good jokes. Well written, well executed. That's it, Mac.
Well, I'll just go ahead and share. Quiet chat today, but Galvatron does share that he's been watching The Boys Season 5, Mortal Kombat 2, The Sheep Detectives, which is apparently surprisingly funny, and Devil Wears Prada 2 while playing Invincible Versus, Saros, and Mixtape.
Ooh, I heard Mixtape is so good. Coming of age story. I heard it's so, so good.
I've heard people say it's very good. I've heard people say they hated it. And then to the people who said that they hated it, I've heard people say, wait a minute, didn't you love Dispatch? So, like, you know, like, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it.
It's an interesting premise. Like, we have 60 seconds to talk about this. Yeah. The idea of making a coming-of-age story is such a tough thing because I feel like everyone's high school experience is so, so different.
Sure.
Everyone's college experience is so, so different.
Yeah.
So, like, the idea of, like, yeah, you know, we're all friends and we're hanging out and we're listening to X type of music. Maybe someone didn't really like that type of music. Maybe someone... Like, people had different experiences, right? So it's not always going to be like a nostalgic thing with that type of game, but if it's well executed, I could see it being fun. So I'm excited to try it out.
Nice. Well, I'm excited to hear back about it, Mr. Nice Guy.
Yeah. Well, Mac, why don't you take us home, sir?
Absolutely. Thanks, everybody, for coming out to the show, for helping make episode 378 what it was. If you are listening to this after the fact, thank you very much. You know, you can rate us on your podcast platform. Also, you can come out to the live show Monday afternoons, 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Central, for an hour of video game talk. You know, go ahead, shoot us questions while you're here. Try to stump us with the nerdy trivia. You have our invitation over here at twitch.tv/2nerdsinapod. That's with the number 2. But until we see you next time, remember to be excellent to each other. And keep it nerdy.
Be kind, y'all.
Bye.
Play video games. Love you. Bye.